session was over and somebody sat down and analyzed this and looked it over and said, geez, there may be a problem out there. He wrote a letter when he signed it in the law. He says, I quote, I express the full confidence in the ability of the legislature to deal at that time with any adverse revenue consequences should they prove to be serious. And I would say that's what we're doing right now, that the revenue consequences are serious. This legislature is attempting to deal with them, and that's where that issue is. And I think the other thing that I think people need to be aware of, that the proposed committee substitute versus the governor's original bill in the next 5 years raises less money. The five-year trigger, if you want to continue it on Prudhoe, would raise about $660 million, I guess, over 5 years. This proposed committee substitute that's there is only about $500 million, so it's a little less there. But the impact over the long haul is that we've rewritten the theory of ELF, and there is a larger fiscal impact on that. But I think in terms of talking stability and issues, I think we've got a formula that will go in that will be beneficial, and it will benefit the marginal oil fields. So, Mr. Speaker, I just wanted to kind of get the discussion, I guess, a little bit on the bill, so people at least know what it is. If they don't want to discuss it anymore, that's fine with me. And a little bit of knowledge that I recall from 1981, maybe I'm incorrect, but that's my recollection of how the 10-year trigger came in. Thank you.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I rise in opposition to the bill. Mr. Speaker, our finance chairman on occasion has spoke favorably of articles written by an Alaskan economist, namely Scott Hawkins. And this morning, if you give me a little bit of latitude, I'd like to quote from that gentleman. Recently, I understand the Department of Revenue had conducted a study of the oil industry and the effect of the change in any taxation at this particular time. And he reads here that the department suggests that not only is the state getting its fair share, that it is perhaps getting much more. Mr. Speaker, the study of the Department of Revenue's figures shows here that over a five-year period of time, total revenues generated from the oil industry is approximately $25 billion. And after subtraction for capital and other expenditures, the total income to the industry is approximately $8.8 billion. But, Mr. Speaker, after we subtract state royalties, state servants tax, state property tax, and state income tax, the industry at that point is left with approximately $326 million out of an original amount of around $8.8 billion. That comes to approximately 96% accruing to the state, Mr. Speaker, leaving the industry with a mere 4%. He goes on to say that whatever the idea of a fair share, it is hard to get much fair than 96%. Mr. Speaker, I think that's the essence of this legislation today. We have an industry currently that is paying some 96% of its revenue flow into the state's treasurer. Mr. Speaker, the member from Fairbanks keeps speaking of the need to balance the state budget. Well, I think there are a lot of other taxpayers in this state that we can spread this misery out over into. I contend that the one taxpayer, the oil industry, has paid its fair share, is currently paying its fair share, and I contend that it is not time to change the rules of the game at this late date. Thank you.
Representative Springer, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't think the whole thing is all that complicated. I think our more experienced colleagues are just making it look that way to confuse us poor freshmen who are inexperienced and innocent. I think the situation is actually pretty simple. It's the citizens need some milk, and there's a whole bunch of milk cows running around out there, and we got to start latching onto some of them. It's the oil industry. We are going to squeeze first. And that cow is going to holler, sure. But we're going to get some milk, and it's not going to die. And in 5 years, it's going to get fat again.
Representative Phillips, and then.
Mr. Speaker, right at this moment, I still haven't decided how I'm going to vote on this thing. I know, and it's not intentional either, because I'm. And let me just give you a little history. Essentially, what the representative, the senior member from Ketchikan, state is essentially what happened. And that's what bothered me at that particular time in 1981. As you recall, some of us still remember the coup of 81, and that took a lot, so to speak, start to the proceedings of the legislature at that time. So our energies and times and our attentions were devoted to that and the aftermath. And I remember distinctly when we voted on this bill on June 24th, 1981, my instincts told me no, my head told me yes. I'm not going to make the same mistake again. And the mistake was that we rushed through this so fast, in my opinion, that we did not have enough time to deliberate and discuss it like we are right now here on the floor of the House. And I've tried to balance everything in my, all the information I have right here before me. I got the minutes of the meetings going from back to 77, the history and everything else. And this thing is really, and I still think it's really too close to call one way or the other. But the one question that was not answered of me that I asked in the House Finance on last Friday was, this thing is going to generate approximately $88 million. I want to know if, you know, you can call this a tax break, you can call this tax increase, changes of taxes, whatever you want to call it, it's still a chunk of money there that somebody, both the state and the oil industry, is fighting over who's going to pay or who's going to get. Where is that money going to for the next fiscal year? Is it going here to the state of Alaska, or is it going outside? And I did not get an answer to that question when I answered it, and there was a big room full of oil lobbyists in the Department of Revenue and other people who are on both sides of the issue. And I still, this is the only question that I've asked, and I think I must have talked to about half the members here already about this bill and agonizing over it, but this is about the only one that was not answered, at least to my satisfaction. I know that the person from Standard Oil Company, just a few minutes ago, gave me some information here, but I still need to know what the other companies plan on doing with that $88 million. And it seems to me that if the arguments can be made that we're taking away jobs, that we're taking away money that's going to be in the state, I want to know where that money is going to. So I'd appreciate an answer to that question.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise on support of this particular bill. We know it changes the economic limiting factor, brings into revenue approximately $88 million for the next particular year. And it's, the intent also was to provide a lower servants tax in fields where the economic of production are truly marginal, and tax break would encourage production where there otherwise would not be any. I wasn't around 10 years ago, but some oil companies argue that the existing ELF should not be changed. 10 years ago, oil companies were also talking about the ELF, which was being considered by the legislature. And if I may, Mr. Speaker, just bring you samples of what was said in 1977. The ELF is too complex, unrealistic, and fails to allow reasonable operating costs. This was stated by Larry Vauver, spokesman for Union Oil Company, Fairbanks. It was in the Fairbanks News Miner on April 22, 1987. Here's another statement. If it adopts the ELF, Alaska will tip the scales against future development. That was said by Monty Taylor, Exxon, USA. That was in Anchorage Times, March 19, 1977. I just want members to listen to some of these things. The proposed ELF legislation would wipe out any remaining incentives for future development in Alaska. That was in 1977. That was said by Richard Donaldson, Standard Oil of Ohio. That was in the Fairbanks Daily News Miner on March 25th, 1977. Here's one. The servants tax bill with the ELF will result in significant losses in state income and fewer jobs. Monty Taylor, Exxon, USA, Fairbanks, Daily News Miner, March 26, 1977. How about this one? The ELF bill would increase state oil and gas servants tax revenues from the North Slope by $7.2 million over 20 years of the field. The magnitude of this increase will cause a congressional backlash. That was said by Kent Sowalter, Standard Oil of Ohio. That was in the Anchorage Times, April 26, 1977. Here's another one. The tax bill will make subsidiary fields at Prudhoe Bay impossible to produce. That statement was made by Richard Donaldson, Standard Oil Company of Ohio. That was in Alaska Advocacy, April 21st, 1977. Here's my final one. The only bitterness of the hearing came during an effort by Union Oil Company spokesman Larry Wilson to read a lengthy and complex analysis of Alaska tax structure. After about 40 minutes on the stand, House Finance Chairman Steve Cooper cut him off with the observation that his testimony was going too long. He stated, "Your testimony was going to take 30 minutes. It's been 40 minutes, and now you say it will take another hour." Wilson shot back, "There are a couple of sides to this question, you know. We've got a lot of money at stake." That was in Anchorage Daily News, April 22nd, 1977. "But there are statements made that some commitments here have been broken." Well, let's go back to 1981 on a floor debate on this particular. We did make some changes to the oil taxation. And many people remember it was on separate accounting, which was resolved in state's favor. Our governor then, Governor Hammond, noted potential fiscal problems with that particular bill he signed into law, but expressed full confidence in the ability of this particular legislature, not this particular, but the future legislature, to deal with the time when we had an adverse revenue consequence. And that's what we are debating today on this particular floor. History shows us that the subject of oil and gas taxes are expected to come up in the late 80s. We are not changing the rules of the game. Rather, we are responding to the need in 1987. Just as our predecessors predicted that we would in 1981. Where does this particular thing lead to? Well, we need to look at the overall spending plan. Where does it play? This is $88 million. Right now, we're looking at approximately a $1.6 million operating budget. What is that? If you look at the operating budget that we passed last June 30th, 1987, that was approximately 1.988. We have reduced the operating budget as far as it can go, okay? And that's approximately $390 million reduction in the operating budget. You know, some of us will debate this in the future on the operating budget. Let's assume that we reduce the $390 million. What would you need to do if just by visually looking at it? We can totally cut out the governor's budget, the Department of Law, Department of Revenue, Department of Commerce, Department of Fish and Game, Natural Resources, Public Safety, Environmental Conservation, Corrections, Court System, and the Legislature. With all these cuts, these add up to $387 million. So basically, the legislature has taken a large cut in the operating budget. If you place this $88 million in the picture, you're looking at also along with the operating budget, you need to debate here on the school debt service. The Governor Cooper has placed approximately $84 million, which is 56%. I debate that is too low. We need to look at that very closely and place approximately $121 million, but that's subject for debate. You also have general obligation bond debt service, right? That's a known number of $148 million. It continues. The loans, we can debate the loan package. The governor has placed approximately $45.7 million in the budget for that. I debate that's too low to take care of the student loans provisions in the state of Alaska. Also, you know, as a rural legislature, I believe in the capital budget. The governor has put approximately $58 million. I believe that's too low. He has captured all federal money, but I still assume that's too low. I'd recommend $100 million. The other thing we look at is we look at the supplementals that's in debate here, $18 million. There is every year this particular body passes new legislation. Assuming you add up those come to approximately $2 billion. The other day, one of the oil companies jumped up and down with a posted price. Many of us felt that this particular posted price here would raise the revenues overnight. We need to be very careful when we look at that, because you need to go back and look at the contract prices. That's what drives these states' revenues. And those are things we need to look at. But one of the things that this $88 million will play a part in the revenue sources that we have. The administration estimate that the revenue increase that'll be is little, it'll be between 1.5 and 1.6. That we have then a shortfall between $400 to $500 million, which means that we can only go to our savings only a couple times. Next year will probably be the last times we go into the savings until this particular body, the other body, and the governor comes up with new revenue ideas. Okay? What does this $88 million do? It plays a very important part in our budget. Whether it's putting a teacher on a job in Henshaw or Service High School, whether it puts the roads in Kotzebue or Fairbanks, whether it continues putting the debt service in place for $121 million, whether it provides funding for the older Alaskans at $250 per month, or child care. Now that's what this $88 million plays. It plays a part in the overall budget. You ask me what the oil companies were going to do with their $88 million. I can't answer that question. But if I was one of the oil companies, maybe I was buying stock in another oil company so I could ship the money to London. You know, it's hard to tell on that. But I think that I support this particular concept. Somebody mentioned native corporations to me just a few minutes ago on the floor. If I was one of those native corporations such as Doyon or Siri and had an interest in a field like Endicott, I would ask my executive officer, what are you doing testifying against this particular bill? Because it's a tax break on their particular joint venture there. I don't have the January forecast stated to go down from 5.6% down to 0.3. So if I was sitting in Galena as my couple of my friends, Jerry, Ray, or Alan, I would ask, why is the president of Doyon testifying against this? Or if I was a shareholder in Chickaloon, sitting there, I would ask myself, why is Siri testifying against this bill when it gives them a tax break? People need to focus on where the increase of the taxes. It's both on Prudhoe and Kaparik. Can it stand this increase? The answer is yes. And I support, I would hope, members that would look at this very closely, that we can pass this piece of legislation because it plays a part in our revenue sources, not tomorrow, but for the future also. Thank you.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't mind anyone, private citizens or corporations, coming down and asking for a tax break. We have plenty of revenues, we have lots of money, and we're only giving hundreds and hundreds of million dollars away. Yet we cry about the poor child, about the poor woman. Why are we giving hundreds of millions away? Is it necessary to continue gathering in more money and to keep government rolling? Or is there another more important issue at stake? Every state has this issue. How to encourage companies or people or individuals putting other people to work. Whether it's someone that has developed a local bakery or someone that developed a gas station, and they hire people and put them to work. They use their personal investments. They encourage and train that individual so that they can have a direct source of income according to their labors and their abilities for their family survivals. Now, 10 years ago, we did anticipate what the problem was, or would be as it is today. And I think it is right that we compromise with the industry. The gentleman from Kotzebue mentioned that they were against the ELF, and for some reason or other, the state wanted more money. We did know in the future that some fields will go down, like Prudhoe. And at the same time, we wanted to encourage more investment in other fields. The gentleman from Ketchikan mentioned that Kaparik is a big field. Kaparik is worthless if you can't produce a barrel of oil out of it, if you can't finance people to go up there and explore, if you can't keep those pumps rolling, if you can't keep creative people finding more ways to get more oil out of that field. It is absolutely worthless until you make a reasonable commitment with industry and with anyone else that's going to invest in this state that here's your future. We know that crude oil is going to go down, and it is on the decline now. We want to encourage you to pump more oil. The only way you can pump more oil is please find some way to invest your millions of dollars into that field. Be creative, be inventive. The state of Alaska puts nothing, not one thing, into the oil industry. We put an awful lot in fishing, and those in the fishing industry don't mind. We encourage them to get out and produce more fish or buy better boats, whatever it is. We put some in timber, but in oil we invest not one red cent. And yet we hope that they will continue employing more people. At least I wish that were the hope. I'm not assured that they want that. We mentioned that the adverse revenues on the states. The finance chairman said that. Well, what about the adverse revenues on industry? We can see what they're doing. You want to know where half the money is going? A lot of it is going into the permanent funds. We've got a guaranteed constitutional. Pump more oil. It's going to go into our permanent funds. More people are going to get permanent dividend checks. The state's going to get more money. The gentleman from Fairbanks says he doesn't understand why we're talking about covering off dividend checks or perhaps capping those. And he was saying, where does the money come from? It comes from the oil industry, my friend. Almost 90% of our dollars over the years come from the oil industry. Now you want to discourage that. You know, about 6 years ago, and I think there's only one representative, well, perhaps two gentlemen from Eagle River were here, and I was working on a slip at that time, and it was rather funny headlines that came around that said, we Alaskan, we don't welch on our debts. We don't welch on our commitment. And there's one legislator that evidently wanted the state to pay a gambling debt. Somebody had gambled $100, $200, and the guy who lost welched. He left the state. Well, by golly, we Alaskan, we don't welch on our debt. We want to pay that. It's the same way today. You make a commitment and you break it. There was a commitment because we knew it was analyzed that those fields would go down, Prudhoe Bay especially. It was analyzed that what can we do in Elliott, what can we do in Kaparik to encourage investment? And now that they have invested, now the people employed up there, we want to take it away from them. I feel that the most important thing in this issue is putting the Alaskans to work. The $89 million are worthless to those people who are not working.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think my remarks are going to be very appropriate after the most immediate remarks from the representative from Anchorage. There are three arguments that I'd like to talk about that have been advanced to oppose this legislation. The first one is the argument that it would stop job creation. The second one is one about tax stability. And the third one is what kind of message this is going to send to the industry and all industry in general. The first one, talking about job creation. Now, I'm generally a proponent of low taxation for industry because it does create jobs, helps to create jobs. But in this situation, we've got to ask ourselves, just who are the jobs going to? And in my community, there's been a major disruption in our labor market. And that gets me to the second question. We talk about tax stability. What about labor policy stability? There's been a major disruption, as I indicated, in our community. If we want to talk about the third area of concern, what message are we sending? I don't know what kind of message we're going to send, but the message that I want to send is that while I'm normally supportive of low taxation because of job creation, I want to send the message that I also want Alaskans hired, and I want to send the message that the arguments for low taxation break down if we don't have Alaskans working. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I don't think it's asking too much that the oil industry help make a small incremental contribution to helping the state address its fiscal situation. This tax is part of the governor's proposed package, and it should be noted that more money will be coming from other sources, from the citizens of Alaska, if the governor's proposals are approved, than is being asked of the oil industry under this proposal. It's clear that we cannot continue spending at the rate that we have been and spending so far beyond our means. If we wish to continue providing the services that at any reasonable level, I believe we need to approve this proposal. It's been suggested that this increase in tax will eliminate jobs. That there may be some truth to that, but I think we should think of the alternatives. The alternative of taking a comparable amount of money out of the operating budget will have a more negative effect on our economy and on the lives of our citizens than the passage of this proposal. I think the approach the governor has suggested, that everyone give up a little bit to help out, makes a lot of sense, and that means the state employees need to be flexible. The citizens of the state need to pay a small share of the cost of the services, and I think what we're asking here of the oil industry is reasonable in that context. I think the specific proposal before us is good policy, and that it will send the right signal to people who wish to develop oil in our state in the future, and that is that our future is in the smaller, more marginal fields, which will be benefited under this proposal. So I think the message we need to send is that we have had a period of stability. We're not seriously disrupting the tax regime. If we wanted to do that, I'm sure there are other proposals people could come up with that would be much more detrimental from the industry's point of view. But the state is acting responsibly to meet the situation before us. And I hope that the industry will take this as an incentive to move forward and develop the marginal fields in our state.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to applaud the comments by the Chairman of Finance. I think he did a good job of summarizing the concerns that many of us have. I stand here today fearful for the people I represent in my district. We only see oil money when it passes through this body. It's the only way it gets down to us, really. Very few of our people are directly employed by the oil industry. However, I'm fearful that oil has been historically with this body, as my friend the representative from Nome so succinctly put it, it's the easiest cow to reach out and milk. And it's easy for a lot of reasons. It's a great big cow, and it produces a lot of milk. And as the Chairman of Finance said, this state has some very pressing needs and some dramatic needs that must be fulfilled. The oil industry was impacted by adverse revenues. That's a nice way of saying they almost went broke in the last few years, just like we did. The oil industry, however, didn't keep all of its employees on. Unless I miss what I read in the Anchorage newspapers, there was a flood going off the Kenai Peninsula and out of Anchorage of people. Human beings have been living in this state, had their children in our schools and so on for a long time. The housing market's pretty rough up there. As it is apparently right here in Juneau right now because of some cuts we've had to make. But we didn't make cuts anywhere near what the oil industry made in its own personnel. And I think they responded very very sensibly. They had a 45 or 50% drop in revenue, and as a consequence, they cut back accordingly. And they cut back on drill rigs on the slope, and they cut back all over the place. We haven't done that. We're trying. But we're dealing with human services here and human needs, and so we have to fulfill a lot of those needs, and I certainly agree there's a lot of good places to spend that money. So today we look out at the oil industry, and we're going to go out and herd up that cow and get a little more milk out of it. And I feel bad about some breaking those commitments, I suppose, if they were true commitments, but I think that's a specious argument because no man's life or property is safe while a legislature sits. And that's not unique to me. That's been said many, many times. And it's because of the ability that a legislature has and has to have to be able to make changes. And so I think that it's appropriate that we consider a change like this. Last year, Mr. Speaker, I watched the governor of this state reach out and grab out of my fisherman's tax an amount of money that he felt he could use to help his administration out by grabbing a, quote, administrative cost. My fishermen were very concerned about that, and we're trying to take care of that this year. But you see, today it's oil. This building was built, and many of the buildings around us were built on the backs of the fishing industry, the timber industry, and the taxpayers of Alaska. Today it's oil. Tomorrow is it fish? The day after tomorrow is it personal income tax? That's the fear I have. And from the people of my district, if we're going to be talking about fish taxes and we're going to be talking about personal income taxes, then you bet, let's go after the oil industry. But if, in fact, this is a trend, and I'm fearful that it is, then I don't want to beat up on one little group of people that are up north and relying for their jobs. I think they've been hit awful hard already. I want to take a real hard look at all the rest of those revenues. I'll take a real hard look at some of those pots of money that are around that have not yet been utilized. And I want to take a real hard look at some of the programs. I believe our people are telling us, all the surveys that we've done, our people are telling us you need to take a further and hard look at some of the programs in state government, that maybe they are still a little too fat. Well, I'd rather look at that first, because I don't want to be asked to hit that button on fish tax tomorrow or personal income tax the day after. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Sund.
We have net ease.
Would the House please stand at ease? Representative Sund.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I got more compliments in the hallway for that last at ease than I've ever gotten on a debate on the floor here. But back to the debate. There was an issue that was brought up. I forget who did it. Representative from East Anchorage, probably. He brings up most of them here. But the question is on tax policy, and it's an important question, an important consideration, is that by implementing this tax policy, are you going to deter production or translation? How many barrels of oil are you going to leave in the ground by developing this tax or that tax or whatever? And we had about 8 different concepts in front of the Tax Policy Committee, and that was one of the, we had a matrix we worked on, and that was one of the considerations that came up, and some were analysis left a lot and a little or whatever. But I just want to lay out that the testimony we had in front of the committees, looking at this bill on the committee substitute that we have in front of us, the Department of Revenue estimate of the implementation of this CS is that we will leave about 26.1 million barrels of oil in the ground over the next 20 years that will not be developed because of the implementation of this tax. Now, 26.1 million barrels sounds like a lot, but if you want to stretch it over 20 years, and I'll say it's not much, and if you want to look at daily production a day, that's 13 days of production running through Valdez at 2 million barrels a day spread over 20 years. That's the Department of Revenue analysis. The Atlantic Richfield Corporation testified in House Finance that they slightly disagreed with that analysis and that they thought it would be more like 100 million barrels. But upon questioning, and a specific question I asked was, what was their assumption on the severance tax? And the answer was they were assuming a 15% severance tax fixed forever, effective rate. Well, there is no 15% effective rate severance tax on any field in Alaska other than Prudhoe Bay right now. And the committee substitute would lower that to about 14.8%. And so if you take that into consideration, we had a little dialogue back and forth that the sideboards on their side would say about 80 million barrels. So we're somewhere between 80 million barrels being left in the ground because of this tax over the next 20 years and 26.1 million barrels estimated by Department of Revenue. And I would say, in my opinion anyway, that is a number, but it's not a significant number when you look at the amount of revenue that is generated by this change. The other answer was that somehow this trigger date and I've been through this once before, but it was brought up again, this trigger date of June 20th, 1987 was somehow debated and thought about and analyzed and discussed in a prior session. And I just want to remind people again that I don't think it was. I think it was a 24-hour decision. And if you want an arbitrary, capricious decision to lay in, that's about as quick as you can get. It's laid this problem on our doorstep, and I think it's up to us to solve it. And we do have a proposed solution in front of us that I'd ask people to support. And I'll leave it at that, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to kind of come full circle, and I'll try to be brief. But when the debate started, the representative from South Anchorage and Kenai hit the point that is going to determine my vote on this bill, because it is you have to consider in voting here not just the bill itself, but what the message is going to be by passage of this legislation. Even if it's only by this one House, even if it doesn't go beyond this, we're still sending a message. I would like to know if there's any member of this body who campaigned for office who didn't talk about diversifying our economy. Maybe there's a few, but just about everybody I know always talks about diversifying our economy. How do we diversify our economy? We extract the resources. We are a resource-rich state. How do you get resources out? You have to spend money. If you're going to develop that mine at Greens Creek, you're going to have to spend serious money, hundreds of millions of dollars, that's going to be used to produce wealth that's going to last for 20 or 30 years. How do you get people to come in and spend that kind of money? How do you get people to invest in Alaska? You show them that if they invest money, that they can make a profit. If you don't make a profit, you don't get investment. We can't allow ourselves to be like a third world country that discourages foreign investment because any profits made can't leave. The representative from Eagle River talks about, well, what happens to this $88 million? Well, I say, if it's not going to stay in the state, that does not necessarily mean you should vote against the bill. You have to realize that if an oil company or a mining company or a timber company or any company was going to come up here and invest millions of dollars, create thousands of jobs, you got to let them take some profit out. Otherwise, they'll never come back. The representative from Nome talks about grabbing this cow and milking it. The point that we've got to emphasize is we've got to increase the herd. We want more than just one cow. We want a whole herd of them. And the way you do that, Mr. Speaker, is by allowing people to make a profit. Thank you.
See what you did, Mr. Minority Leader? Representative Boucher.
You're right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to just speak briefly on a few things that have been referred to this morning. I've looked back through the history of resource development in our state, the hopes that we had back in the 60s when we were drilling. In fact, I think I had a small part in the discovery of the original Prudhoe Bay field. I was a city councilman for the city of Fairbanks back in the early, in the mid-60s, and we had just brought in what was the first Lockheed Hercules into Alaska, and we were looking for any cargo that we could haul. And it wasn't too successful. We were able to haul some fish runs and some other things, but toward the late 60s, one of the major companies had a rig at a place, I believe it was called Susie One, and they were going to ask Tennessee Miller to haul it overland. In fact, they're going to move the rig out of the state. As I understood at that particular time, was a guy named E.M. Mo Benson that I got to meet, and he was from an old company called Richfield. And to tell you the truth, if I didn't sell a load on that Herc, I was going to lose my job as VP of sales, you know. And so I talked to them, and we developed a plan for moving that rig from Susie 1 up to an area that I believe was later referred to as Sagwa. Well, they packed up the rig and they moved it, and I kept my job, and there was a hole in the ground, and that hole in the ground became what was to be the beginning of Prudhoe Bay. I recall also in periods of time that when I was mayor of Fairbanks, and some of you may or may not remember, we didn't have a single oil company listed in the Fairbanks directory. So I got on a plane and I traveled around the country, and Atlantic Richfield agreed to open up a shack. There's a young guy named Johnny Russo, I believe. Johnny came out of Bakersfield. So they opened up shack, and we needed some ball fields, and they participated in it. So I think really what we've got to do is we've got to look just a little bit beyond big oil and shipping money to London, and I think we've got to identify some of the people who are employed in the state. And saying that, the reason I am going to vote against this today, and I've told my good friend, the governor, that I was, and I told him my reason. I think what we've got to do, as we move into a competitive world, we talk about the 21st century and the Pacific Rim, we have to maintain a stable environment. We simply can't solve short-term problems when really we should be dealing with the long-term issue, the movement of this state into the 21st century. There's one other thing, it really does bother me, though. And you know, I stood here last year and I fought for a constitutional Alaska hire bill. And one of the things I had hoped in the interim, and I've told my friends in the industry this, that I believe that we should not continually be beat on the head on this floor about this issue. I believe that no matter what, no matter how we frame it, and I will admit that last year's bill was far from what I wanted it to be, but it was constitutional. But there were several efforts made in the interim to bring people from labor and people from industry together. And there were several of the companies that were very forthright, and I did think we were going to make some progress. But there were some that were pretty hard-nosed about it, and those, they just felt that they wanted to continue the battle, just for the sake of continuing the battle. And I want to remind those that there are probably some people that are voting here today because they are voting for jobs for their people. Now, I'm not going to get into the issue of fairness or what have you, but one of the things that we built back in the early 70s was a skilled labor force. And while I think it's time that industry and the third floor and labor, that was a forum created, and I don't know quite how it can be done, so we can sit down and begin to deal with the reality of this situation. Because once again, we're here, some people's feet are being held to the fire on account of this issue, and I'm not satisfied that it has been resolved. I think the executive branch can play a leadership role in this. I know I have talked about it. I know there are some people in industry and labor, and I would like to see that problem dealt with, and then maybe we can deal with these issues simply on their merits, up or down. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think what bothers me the most today is that the body is failing to uphold agreements that we've made in the past. It bothers me that as members of this body, we are sending out a message which indicates that our society, as represented by this body, does not honor agreements. It bothers me that we, the legislature, violate agreements in order to cover up our own errors. Who is responsible for the monies that are appropriated in the state of Alaska? We are. Who has allowed spending to increase by over 300% in the last 10 years, while the population of the state of Alaska has only grown by 20%. We have. Who has failed to put a case-based budget formula into operation? We have, Mr. Speaker. And now we're asking the oil companies to pay for our mistakes. Is this what the public really wants us to do? Are we representing a society that fails to recognize the validity of agreements in the name of feeding an oversized budget. That's the message that we're putting out here today, should we pass this piece of legislation. If we violate the principles established with our partner in the development of our oil resources, the public, folks, deserves accountability. Changing the tax structure for the oil companies or imposing upon the people of the state of Alaska an income tax does not accomplish that. The public deserves a budget reduced to realistic levels. Not public servants, in my opinion, who wimp out of agreements on their behalf. If we cannot correct the budget problems or the budget mistakes, then that's our problem. But it's an abrogation of our sworn duty to make the private sector or put the private sector on the sacrificial altar to cover our political mistakes. Many of you will probably have something to say about this later. I will not condemn the constituents of my district by assuming the role, you'll like this, of a pork-fed bounty hunter on their behalf. And by the way, that statement was made by Dick Schultz, April 1st, 1987.
Representative Menard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we've had a lot of good debate on this subject. I think we've heard the technical side, and we've heard the historical side, and we've heard the milking side, but we haven't heard the poetic side. So now maybe we can wind it up on the poetic side. My favorite poet is Robert Service, and in his poem, The Cremation of Sam McGee, he says, "But you promised true, and it's up to you to cremate those last remains." Now, a promise made is a debt unpaid, and the trail has its own stern code. Mr. Speaker, that is precisely the point. A promise is a debt unpaid. We did make a promise some years ago that we would give them a tax break, and it's time for us to pay that debt and keep our promise. The oil companies have been good citizens. They have paid a huge share of the tax. It's no secret that our huge budgets came with the oil dollars. They have also supported many community activities. In my own community, ARCO has recently donated a fire truck to Wasilla, and they have been most generous. Mr. Speaker, if we fail to keep our promise, the trail does have its own stern code, which in this case could mean less future development. Another black mark to the business world that Alaska broke its promise again. Then we wonder why business is reluctant to come and invest. Because we keep cremating them. Mr. Speaker, they say that stranger was crazed with the hooch, and I'm not denying it so. I'm not so wise as the lawyer guys, but strictly between us two, I'm asking you all to vote against HB 164. We made a promise. I'm keeping mine. How about you?
There we go again. Are we ready for Kipling? Representative Schultz? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not going to make any poems here. I have had a lot of deliberations on this particular bill and this vote, and I'm fully intending to support the bill today and reconsider it and go through the arguments again and give this thing my fullest and best consideration and uphold the Constitution as my oath says. And I feel very strongly that my commitment is to the people of this state, and that because someone in the past had a different opinion than mine, well, that's just too bad. I didn't make a promise in the past, and if you look at history and what representative governments do, every time a legislature changes, there's new people who have new ideas who may not happen to agree with people in the past. Are we going to not change anything simply because someone who happened to be in the legislature before thought it was a good idea? Or are we not going to put anything back in place that someone cut out before simply because They thought it was a bad idea, and now we think it's a good idea. That's why we're here. We're here to make the decisions today. We're not here to sit back and lay the blame on someone in the past or give the credit to someone in the past. We have to make the decisions today, this legislature. That's what we were elected to do. In the best interest of the people of this state of Alaska, consider the arguments and do what we felt is the best thing in the interest of this state. That's what I fully intend to do. The arguments of breaking promises and breaking commitments have finally gotten to me on this. I'm not breaking any commitments. I'm not breaking any promises. I'm considering this question as carefully as I possibly can, and I'm going to punch the button based on what I feel is the best thing for this state. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We've been beating the oil drum, and this is a complex matter. We have a long history in our state with a good and sometimes not so good relationship with those who come with oil development in mind and leave not only with obligations that we as taxpayers must continue to support, but have offered certainly a great advantage to us as citizens of our state. On the matter of honor and oil, I think it is important to keep in mind that the past must meet the present. For it's only then as we as a legislature or as a state or indeed as a nation can we, after meeting the present, proceed to the future. And that future sometimes creates new challenges, new situations to which we must find new solutions as public decision makers. I'm going to support this bill because I think that it helps deliver a package of stability to our state and sends a message to those who want to come to our state. Stability is the factor, and we all must pay a part, make an effort to ensure that that stability works out over the long haul. Thank you very much.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 164, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
25 yeas, 15 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 164, Finance Amendment, has passed the House.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Failing to get the two-thirds necessary for the effective date clause, I would like to move the effective date clause for committee substitute for House Bill number 164, Finance.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Sund.
I'll yield it.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I'd request people to give fair consideration to the effective date clause in this legislation. As you may or may not know, the June 20th date is a significant date, and that's the date that the ELF exemption goes away. The effective date on here, I believe, says that for oil produced after May 31st, so it's an administration of a tax issue here rather than whether you like the ELF or not. I'd suggest to the members that they give consideration to ease of administration when considering the vote on the effective date.
Mr. Majority Leader.
May we please have a brief at ease?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had the motion to adopt the effective date clause. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For the members' information, I am informed that there are two effective date clauses in this bill, sections 4 and 5. The motion properly should have been, I move the effective date clauses, section 4 and 5.
The motion is the effective date clauses. Representative Sund.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, I want to speak in support of the effective date clauses and point out a couple of items here. One, whether you like the change in the ELF or not, that if it is going to happen, it should happen in an orderly fashion, and it shouldn't be a haphazard date somewhere in the future, 90 days after the governor signs the bill into law. I think that's a stability argument, it's a certainty argument, and people can plan for it. Otherwise, you're going to have chaos, and not only in the oil company's tax section, but also in the state's tax section. And I'd also like to note that, you know, we went through this discussion once before that, you know, the other body can add the effective date clause and send it back, and I didn't really care for the resolution we had last time changing the title, and I'd like those people who thought about that and brought that issue up again that perhaps we could do it right this time, and so that we don't get into that box of if the other body is going to adopt this bill, and we all know the debate on that, that we should do it in an orderly fashion. I'd ask for your support on the effective date vote.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I spoke in our own caucus about this particular, or these two effective dates, and I'd like to do so now before the whole body. I agree on one point and disagree on another with the gentleman from Ketchikan. I do think that it makes no sense at all to hold up these two effective dates on this particular bill because of the administrative nightmare in trying to have one tax policy for one period of time, a second one for a very short period of time, and then a third one for another long length of time. There's no reason at all to put either the companies nor the Department of Revenue through those hoops and have extra costs to everybody concerned. So I don't think this is the time. I don't, however, want to associate myself with his statement that it would never be right to hold up an effective date.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I may disagree philosophically with the bill, but I'm certainly going to go along with the effective date. I ask my colleagues to do the same thing.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I'm going to have to disagree with the effective date because I think what it does is not allow the industry to properly plan. This has a May 1st, Section 4 does, a May 1st effective date, and chances are that we probably won't adjourn until May 19th, the 120th day. May 31st, yeah, okay. But still, we're not going to adjourn to May 19th. Now, chances are there's going to be differences from the other body in the bill, and it takes at least 15 or 20 days, depending when the governor gets the bill, for him to sign on or a pocket veto after session. And we're just not allowing the industry a fair time, if we allow this date on it, to decide, well, what is our new tax liability? I think the better thing is to allow no effective date. Then we know that after 90 days after the bill is signed into law, then they know how they have to adjust. Same way with me. If you should dare to pass a tax bill for individual tax, I'll know how to adjust my spending. And I think this date here is very narrow. Of course, the department may be ready to get those monies in right away, but certainly an industry, a baker, a shoemaker, whoever it may be, suddenly sees a new tax upon them. They need time to plan. Where will they cut in order to pay this new liability? I think it's very wrong. It's much better to have no effective date. Then you know that once it becomes law and the industry knows, they have 90 days to adjust. This is the wrong date.
Representative Pierce.
Mr. Speaker, if I could just make a point to the previous speaker. The change we're talking about under the bill that the House has just passed is not a change. Nobody has to plan for anything because nothing changes. So nobody has to worry about whether they know by May 1st or by May 31st because they aren't going to be changing.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the effective date clauses be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk tally the board.
32 yeas, 8 nays.
The effective date clauses have been adopted.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on CS for HB 164.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. have some citations on today's calendar. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have two citations on today's calendar. The first honors Tundra Times. Second honors Holger Jorgensen, 40 years commercial flying in Alaska. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt both citations.
Are there any objections as the adoption on this, today's calendar? Hearing no objections, citations have been approved. This brings us down to unfinished business. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd move and ask unanimous consent that House Concurrent Resolution 12 be returned to Rules Committee for further consideration.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the House Joint Resolution 12 with uniform rules will go back to rules. Okay. Any further unfinished business? Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First, just an announcement. Please keep your packets for House Bill 164, the ELF bill. That'll be up on reconsideration on Friday. Second, we have several requests for excused absence, and I move and ask unanimous consent that they be granted. First, Representative Collins, from 4:30 p.m. Thursday, April 16, to Plain Time Tuesday, April 21. Second, Representative Hanley, from After Session Thursday, April 16, to Plain Time Wednesday, April 22. Third, Representative Sund, from 6:30 a.m. Friday, April 10, 1987, to Plain Time Monday, April 13. Fourth, Representative Hoffman, from After Session Friday, April 3, to Plain Time Monday, April 6. And fifth, Representative Cotton, from 5:30 Friday, April 3, to Plain Time Monday, April 6.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the members listed by the Majority Leader are excused from the call of the House. Any further unfinished business? Announcements of standing committees or special committees? Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock, tomorrow Thursday, at 9 o'clock in the Hammond Room at the Centennial Hall, we'll be hosting Mr. Lark Allen, who's the manager for program development for IBM and telecommunications strategy. We've talked a lot about this, and I think that you'll find it very interesting. Then, in addition to that, at 3:30 during the regular schedule committee of the House Telecom Committee in room 603, Mr. Allen will be making a second presentation. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cato.
Transportation Committee meeting will be held a little bit later today, 2 o'clock instead of 1:30.
Representative Adams.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Finance will start at 1:15. We'll hear today's calendar. Also, House Bill number 70, the Medicals Board, will be heard next Wednesday in House Finance along with the calendar. Also on Thursday at 9 a.m., the Subcommittee on House Bill 127, the Supplemental Appropriations, will have its meeting. It's at 9 a.m. again in my office. Thank you.
Representative Sund.
The House Judiciary will be delayed 15 minutes till 1:45 and give the members time to get something to eat.
Representative Larson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. A number of announcements here. On the Finance Education Subcommittee on the Education Budget will meet April the 2nd and again on April the 6th at 8:30 a.m. The Public Safety Subcommittee on the Budget will meet April the 3rd and April the 8th at 8:30 a.m. By the way, all these meetings are in the House Finance Committee room. And then the Finance Committee Subcommittee on House Bill 126, that's the Foundation Program, will meet this Saturday on April the 4th from 2 to 4 p.m. in the House Finance Committee room. And by the way, the members of that committee are Representative Prashow, Boyer, Swackhammer, Frank, Gall, and Rieger. So if those members would be there at 2 p.m.
Representative Adams.
Clarification, that's House Finance 145 versus 115. 145, so if I have a chance to
leave. Okay. Any further committee announcements? General announcements? Representative Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to remind members that they're invited to join the Alaska Mariculture Association for a reception this Thursday, April 2nd, 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Penthouse. We'll be featuring farmed salmon, scallops, mussels, shrimps, and shrimp and oysters. And this year, in addition to the menu, is sushi prepared from cultured seafood products. So everyone's invited. Be there early if you want the good stuff.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you. This is a subcommittee announcement. The CNRA subcommittee will have a work session Friday at 8:30 a.m. in the Butrovich Room. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Juneau World Affairs Council has asked that I invite you all to a rather interesting speak by Phil Rottinger. He's a former CIA official. He was instrumental in the CIA's overthrow of the Guatemalan government in 1954, and the United States' role in Central America will be discussed as it is currently today. It'll be in the courthouse, room D, at 5:30 tomorrow, and there is no charge.
Any further announcements? Special orders? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would request privileges of the floor to speak on the federal highway bill veto.
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A very important event is occurring in Congress at the moment. It has immense ramifications on this state, and I think it's important to call the attention of this body and the citizens of this state to that particular event. This has to do with H.R. 2, the Federal Aid for Highway Bill. This will involve approximately $88 billion in federal highway funds. In a bipartisan effort, the Congress of the United States worked 2 years on the bill. It was passed overwhelmingly by majorities in both houses. The president unfortunately vetoed the bill last Friday. That veto will cost thousands of jobs nationally. States are in danger of losing their entire 1987 highway construction season, unless that veto is overridden. Federal monies were shut off 6 months ago, resulting in $2 billion in highway projects being postponed nationally. This amount will increase $1 billion for each additional month's delay. Nationally, the veto could cost up to 800,000 jobs in the construction industry if the bill is not passed. This is important because construction projects require long lead time. State officials will not put out the projects for bid unless there is money available. This is particularly harmful in northern climates with short construction seasons, such as the state of Alaska. The ramifications in this state, according to our Director of State Federal Relations in Washington, D.C., are as follows. This bill could mean over $100 million annually to the state of Alaska. Alaska would receive $152 million in federal highway funding for this fiscal year, fiscal 1987 alone. This exceeds the amount of funds the state contributes to the Highway Trust Fund. And that amount could continue until 1981, FY 1981, which could be over $700 million. Further, challenges to formulas favorable to Alaska and other less populous states would be postponed for a considerable period of time if the veto is overridden. We would receive a minimum 0.5% of $356 million in demonstration projects, and this would annually provide Alaska another $1.4 million and allow broad flexibility for its use. A number of issues, including demonstration projects, toll financing, discretionary funding, allocation rules, Buy America rules, and Brooks Act regulation changes, would have to be dealt with in separate legislation, raising a significant risk that the project would be prolonged considerably if the veto is not overridden. Let me give you some dates. If the bill is not passed by May 1, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities of the State of Alaska will be unable to advertise and bid 7 projects worth $14 million. Several of these projects are already on hold. These include projects in Ketchikan and near the North Pole, near Fairbanks. If our bill is not passed by the 4th of July, 9 additional projects worth another $23 million will be delayed. These include projects in Copper Center and other projects in Fairbanks. A total of 16 projects worth $37 million will not be advertised or awarded during the prime months of Alaskan road building. If a bill is not passed by September the 7th and the veto overridden by that date, the projects will be delayed because of freeze-up and other delays, and most construction activity would be delayed until the following spring, 1988. These would include 12 additional projects worth another $26 million. In total, Mr. Speaker, contractors would be denied the opportunity to bid on 28 projects worth $63 million if we do not have a federal bill by Labor Day. Using estimates provided by the Federal Department of Commerce, these delays translate into the loss of over 800 jobs at the construction site and the loss of another 800 jobs for suppliers of highway construction materials. Adding the multiplier effect, the total loss to the Alaskan economy this summer alone could easily exceed 3,000 jobs. Mr. Speaker, this problem is so important that Governor Cooper has urged our congressional delegation that the veto be overridden. The problem is so important that 23 members of this House sent a telegram to the delegation yesterday after the governor informed us of the problem, urging that the governor be that the veto be overridden by the president, by the United States Senate. The construction industry has also urged that that veto be overridden and that our delegation vote appropriately. Yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives voted by a vote of 350-73 to override the veto. Mr. Speaker, today, the U.S. Senate failed by 2 votes to override that veto. That vote will be reconsidered. I understand our Senate delegation voted against overriding the veto. This is sufficiently important, and the vote will be sufficiently close and immediate that today I am asking other members of the House and members of the Alaska public who may be watching this broadcast on television to join with us to ask our delegation to save these Alaskan jobs, pour this money into our economy, contact our Senate delegation, and ask that the veto be overridden. This is not the issue to support the president on a veto that so directly affects our Alaskan economy. Too much is at stake. We need the money and the jobs too much. It is noteworthy that even the Republican leader in the U.S. House and the Republican whip voted to override this particular veto. This is a bipartisan issue. Jobs and the economy is a bipartisan issue. Thank you.
Any other special orders, Representative Taylor?
Yes, the same subject, Mr. Speaker.
Are there any objections?
And one other courtesy. I'm as hungry as everybody else in this body is, but I consider it somewhat of an insult to have this many people off the floor. I realize it's been a long day, but it's disappointing because I think the former speaker made some very interesting points that needed to be considered by everyone. My only concern is I sure hope when and if those federal monies come in, that our governor intends to release the state money that's necessary to match them so those programs can go forward. So far, those monies have been impounded by one governor and held up now by another one, and I'm very concerned that those monies move forward, and I sure hope that his concerns about this veto and the overriding of it means that he is intending to move forward with those federal projects as soon as we possibly can. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders? Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Same subject, if I could.
Any objection?
One of the nice things about being the minority leader is that I get to stay in here and listen to these special orders at 1:30 in the afternoon. Last year, I'd have been in the lounge eating fried chicken, but right now, I'd like to thank the majority leader for pointing this out to me. As soon as I get off the floor, I'll be phoning my senators, Murkowski and Stevens, congratulating them on their vote and asking to hang tough with the president. Thank you.
Are we still on the air?
Mr. Majority Leader. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent with that the body stand in adjournment until 10 a.m. Friday.
10 a.m. Friday.